Thank you, thank you, thank you. That was beautiful, Heidi. I was telling Heidi when she came in, it's such a pleasure to actually be here at the same time because I've been here now, January will be 9 years, and every time but one, and today, that Heidi has been here, and you're here often, I've been gone. So it's just really nice. Really, really nice to get to sit and listen to you sing again. Thank you for the gift. Thank you, thank you. So I had an interesting experience this Thanksgiving I want to share with you. Wednesday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, our youngest son, who is 16, had tickets to go hear Dweezil Zappa sing in Boulder. And so Ryan is not quite old enough to drive yet. So Mark and I, being the doting parents that we are, went to Boulder and dropped he and Kate, his girlfriend, off at the concert and went to see a movie. And they got done about the time the movie was over. So when Mark and I were coming out of the movie theater, the theater is a relatively new theater up there, and it's built in a mall that isn't quite complete yet. And so walking through back out to, you have to kind of park a ways away from where the theater is. And we walked through this kind of deserted area. And as we were walking, this little woman came towards us, and she was visibly upset and tearful and mumbling to herself something about not being able to find what she was looking for. And she walked past, and I caught her. I kind of, you know, caught the conversation and the feeling more than anything else. And she rounded the corner and went out of sight. And I said to Mark, hold on a minute, I have to find out if she's okay. And I walked, and he, of course, followed me. And I walked around the corner and down a little ways. And there was an elevator, and she was just getting in the elevator. And I put my hand out and stopped the elevator door from closing and said, are you okay? And she was tearful, and she said, yes. She was an older woman, and she said, somebody stole my bicycle. I can't find my bicycle, and I'm just really upset, and I just need to go home. And I said, do you need a ride? Is there anything we can do to help you? And she said, no, I just need to go home. I said, you know where you're going, because you don't always know, like, what's true and what isn't. Do you know where you're going? And she said, yes, and she told me her address. She said, I know exactly where I'm going, and thank you so much for stopping. Great. Have a good night. I hope your bike comes back to you. The elevator doors closed, and she went home. And I didn't think too much about that. So we picked up the kids, and we drove home to Colorado Springs. And Kate lives just east of downtown, and so we drove to Kate's house on a little street in downtown Colorado Springs. And we dropped Kate off, and as we were going to the opposite end to turn and head back to this side of town, there was a gentleman kneeled down in the road right in front of us. And he was down on one knee and holding, he had on a hoodie and a jacket over the top of that, and he was kind of wrapped around himself. But he was in the middle of the road. And so Mark said, that's kind of weird. I said, yeah. And he pulled around the other side because that's the only way we could have gone. And he stopped. And I rolled down the window and said, are you okay? And the guy mumbled something. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you speak up? And he said, something about 911. And I said, okay, do you need help? Can we help get you out of the street? And he mumbled again, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. And Mark put the car in park and walked around the outside, and I got out of my side. And we helped get him to the curb, found out his name, found out he was having chest pain, called the paramedics, called 911, and they sent the paramedics. And the paramedics came. They had all the information we had, and they were actually very quick to move us out to say, you know, go ahead, we've got this from here. So we got back in the car, and we drove home. And I felt good about having stopped and really didn't think much more about it until dinner the next day. So at Thanksgiving dinner, I was talking with my kids about the things that we were grateful for and mentioned being grateful that we had happened to be where we needed to be. And I told them what happened. And my oldest son, who is military, was in the military as a security officer, got really upset and said, please don't do that, Mom. Please don't be the person who I have to say in the eulogy, my mother's kindness killed her. Please don't stop when you don't know who the person is. Just drive on and call 911 and let them come and take care of it. And in response to that, my youngest son, who remember was in the car with us, said, yeah, because I'm in the car with you. And it was a very poignant moment at our Thanksgiving dinner. A stop and take a breath moment for Mom, right? Okay, how do I respond to this? And so I responded then that I appreciated their care. I appreciated that that comes from loving me. And I have given a lot of thought to this. It's really interesting that our subject for study this month has been compassion. That has been our topic. So often, so many times more than I can even tell you, when we're studying something, I get to live the big questions around it. It's just, you know, like you put it out there and Spirit gives it back to you. Because, okay, you want to teach this, you better have an experience that makes you really question. So that the question around all of this is, who do you want to be and what kind of world do you want to live in? Who do you want to be? And what kind of world do you want to live in? Do we want to live in a world that is compassionate, where we would stop and take care of each other, or do we want to live in fear? So the truth of the matter is, in the moment that I rolled down the window, I looked at that guy wrapped up in his coat and thought, please don't have a gun under there. Please don't have a gun under there. And then I took a deep breath and got out of the car. Because if he didn't have a gun under there, he was hurt. And that's a choice, right? It's a choice we all make. It can be a life or death choice in today's world. But it's a choice that we make, that we have to make before the moment. We have to give some thought to before we're actually in that place. Who are we? Who do we want to be in a world where most of what we hear makes us afraid of each other? Most of what we hear reminds us that there's violent tendencies in our society and makes us afraid of each other, more afraid of each other than we are wandering in the woods at night by ourselves. Just think about that. We are more afraid of each other than we are bears and mountain lions. We are really learning to become more and more afraid of each other. And there are some interesting things science is finding out about that. A lot of us believe that violent people are inherently violent, that they were born that way, that there's something broken in them that made them that way. And science is finding out that that is not true. Science is finding out that unless there is some brain trauma during pregnancy, that by brain scan, they can show us that we are born peaceful people. So if we are born peaceful people, if the nature of our brain is peace, what happens that makes us violent? What happens that makes us violent is that we're raised without compassion or kindness, generally in an environment that includes negligence or physical abuse. Generally. And that environment changes how we see the world, allows us to see the world as a scary place, a place where people are not safe, where we have to protect ourselves from one another, a place where the only voice we have happens when we stand up aggressively toward one another. We are taught that. We are not born that way. It is a brokenness that comes from our life experience. It's very interesting to think about that. It's very interesting to think about that. It's very interesting also to think about what happens with compassion, how compassion works. So how many of you have watched like America's Funniest Videos, where the guy comes barreling down the mountain on the skis, can't stop and splat into the wall? Have you seen that kind of thing? or somebody gets hurt, and have you felt yourself or heard yourself go, oh, right? Like we actually respond, or watched a child pick up a lemon and bite into it and found yourself going, ooh, right? That happens because our brain has something that's recently been discovered that's called a mirror neuron. We have mirror neurons in our brain. And science doesn't really understand everything about how they work. What we know so far is, for some reason, when we observe something happening in someone else, we respond in a mirrored way to what we're observing. We respond in a mirrored way. So, knowing that much, when we are people on the receiving end of compassion, what will the mirrored response be? Compassion. When we are people on the receiving end of kindness, what will the mirrored response be? Kindness. We are one being. We understand that here. That's not everybody's belief system, but it is the belief, the foundation of Unity's belief system, that we are an interconnected, interwoven being, one with the holy, however you name the holy. And so for us, it's not such a surprise that we respond to each other that way, because we are the same back and forth. And we have to remember that it works that way, because we live in a world where what we're observing is aggression, anger, judgment, and fear. This is the world we're in right now. And it is a very hard world for us as grown-ups to live in. Imagine how hard it is for children, for our children and our grandchildren. Imagine what they're being exposed to. So who will we be? Will we be compassion in action? Or will we be fear in action? And the answer to that is, we each have to make that decision in the moment, don't we? Because there are some moments where the exact appropriate response is to be fearful and take care of yourself. There are moments that we have to do that, that we know it's dangerous, more dangerous than we can be helpful. And there are moments when compassion is the right answer, and taking time to be human with one another is important. And that's the great lesson St. Francis taught. He was an interesting character. St. Francis was the son of a merchant, a cloth merchant, a very wealthy cloth merchant. He wanted to be not a cloth merchant like his dad, that was boring. He wanted to be a knight. So he went into battle. And when he went into battle, he was very young and naive, and the troops he was with came under attack. And instead of running away like the other smarter guys did, he stayed, he got captured. He and everyone, several people were captured. He was the only one they kept alive. They killed everybody else because nobody else had value to them. They kept him because they could ask a ransom of his father. And his father didn't pay the ransom for almost a year. So he was imprisoned. And while he was imprisoned, he got sick. He was alone. He had deep trauma. And for the first time in his life, he had a mystical experience, a person-to-person connection with God, however you call that, for him with God. And that's what kept him alive. And specifically, the face of God that he communicated with was the face of Jesus. And so this changed him dramatically. Prior to going to battle, he would have nothing to do with the lepers in his community because he was afraid. He didn't want leprosy and he was afraid. When he got back, when he came back from having been ransomed out, he crossed paths with a gentleman with leprosy and he felt compelled to hug the man. Now that's a big deal. We don't have leprosy around us, but maybe you can compare it to the time in America where we were so afraid of being close to someone who had AIDS, because we didn't understand the disease and we were afraid we might catch it. Imagine what it would be like to live a life not only in physical pain, but in the emotional pain of never being touched because people were afraid of you. For St. Francis to hug a person with leprosy was a huge example of how he was changed, that he stepped beyond his fear into compassion at personal risk because it was what he was called to do. Sometimes we have to step past personal risk to be human with one another. Sometimes we have to remember who we are. And for me, and I hope for many of you, that quality of humanity is too important to lose. So I offer you this consideration. I offer you the opportunity to consider for yourself how you hold compassion in your life. And I want to show you a quick video that is a statement of compassion that is held by many around the world. So I'd like you to watch this quick video.
The principle of compassion lies at the heart of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions,
calling us always to treat all others as we wish to be treated ourselves.
Compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures.
To dethrone ourselves from the center of our world and put another there.
To honor the inviolable sanctity of every single human being.
Treating everybody without exception.
With absolute justice, equity, and respect.
It is also necessary in both public and private life.
To refrain consistently and empathically from inflicting pain.
To act or speak violently out of spite, chauvinism, or self-interest.
To impoverish, exploit, or deny basic rights to anybody.
And to incite hatred by denigrating others, even our enemies.
Is a denial of our common humanity.
We acknowledge that we have failed to live compassionately.
And that some have even increased the sum of human misery in the name of religion.
We therefore call upon all men and women
to restore compassion
to the center of morality and religion.
To return to the ancient principle
that any interpretation of scripture
that breeds violence,
hatred,
or disdain
is illegitimate.
To ensure that youth are given accurate and respectful information
about other traditions, religions, and cultures.
To encourage a positive appreciation
of cultural
and religious diversity.
To cultivate
an informed empathy
with the suffering of all human beings,
even those
regarded as enemies.
We urgently need to make compassion a clear, luminous, and dynamic force in our polarized world,
rooted in a principled determination to transcend selfishness.
Compassion can break down political, dogmatic, ideological, and religious boundaries.
Born of our deep interdependence, compassion is essential for human relationships and to a fulfilled humanity.
It is the path to enlightenment and indispensable in the creation of a just economy and a peaceful global community.
Can you get behind that? So the Charter for Compassion is a real document. We have the opportunity to adopt that document as part of who we are as a community. I don't want us to do that without serious consideration. There is a 5 or 6 week course that I will be offering in January that invites us to actually go through this document and really talk about what it means. Really give it our hearts and our consideration. So I'll be inviting you to participate when it gets to be that time. I will post this video and the link to the Charter for Compassion on our Facebook page so that you can begin to become familiar with it. It is an important consideration in today's world, isn't it? Yeah, so when you ask yourself, how are we ever going to get out of this mess? Compassion is one of the very important answers. So while Heidi gets ready, I have some quotes for you. The Dalai Lama said, "Love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive." There's an Amish proverb that says, "Instead of putting others in their place, put yourself in their place." Thomas Merton said, "Compassion is the keen awareness of the interdependence of all things." And Pema Chodron said, "We habitually erect a barrier called blame that keeps us from communicating genuinely with each other, and we fortify it with our concepts of who's right and who's wrong. We do that with the people who are closest to us, and we do it with political systems, with all kinds of things that we don't like about our associates or our society. It is a very common, ancient, well-perfected device for trying to feel better. Blame others. Blaming is a way to protect your heart, trying to protect what is soft and open and tender in yourself. Rather than own that pain, we scramble to find some comfortable ground. Yasmin Mogahed said, "Compassion is to look beyond your own pain to see the pain of others." And this last quote is from Anonymous. "Compassion is at the heart of every little thing we do. It is the dearest quality we possess. Yet all too often it can be cast aside with consequences too tragic to speak of. To lose our compassion, we lose what it is to be human."